Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullestubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to another Rahulastapur with Peter Lord and Morph, which might not be that much fun in audio, but hey, why don't you check out the video to see Morph in full flow? Talking of which, we're doing a Kickstarter campaign to make these videos. We've done 25 already this year. We're doing a few more up to the summer. And then, if all is well, we'll try and video as much of the coming tour as we can as well. But it costs a lot of money, and we, as usual, need your help for that. If you don't care about the videos, don't worry. There are lots of cool rewards you might want that are exclusive. If you've seen that Rubik's Cube we had last time, or any of the cool t-shirts I've been wearing in some of the gigs, you can't get those anywhere else. So do back the Kickstarter if you don't want to miss out. There are some nice t-shirts going to be made. One for Rahulastubber, two for Me One versus Me Two Snooker, but you can only ever have one of those. It's either Me One or Me Two, and one for Stone Clearing. And there's lots of other great rewards, including a video of a snooker frame, and a documentary about stone clearing, which will be videoed. Also these t-shirts I've mentioned, and if you want to spend a bit more, you can get an actual stone that I have cleared in a presentation case, or a snooker ball signed by all the snooker players, and you can get your name in the credits of a Rahulastubber, or you can sponsor a stone clearing podcast or a snooker podcast. There's lots of stuff there. Why not go to rahulastubber.co.uk/kickstarter? You can see what's there. Even if you just want to chuck us a couple of quid and not get a reward, that would be a massive help. We've got to raise a lot of money, and we might not do it. And if we don't do it, we won't video any more of the shows. It won't spoil your audio entertainment. And believe me, if we make any money from the adverts we're putting into these shows now, we will plough that back into making lots more content. So that's all we're really interested in with these campaigns. And we're just trying to cover our costs for the videos, which are phenomenal. If you don't care about the videos, fuck it. Let's listen to the show. See you in a sec. Bye. Rahulastubber.co.uk/Kickstarter. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bath Comedia. Please welcome a man who saw the great rock and roll swindle in this venue in the early 1980s. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hello, Bath. Lovely to be here. And welcome to Richard Herring's Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels podcast. Though I was hanging around at the pump rooms at the Roman baths. The way it turns out, they don't like you farting at all. That's strange, isn't it? They especially in the restaurant, they don't like it. Don't call it that, mate. Everyone there calls it Rahulastubber, so I don't know if that's going to... That's going to catch on. We're in Bath. It is a wonderful place. Once called Aquasulis, of course. But then in Anglo-Saxon times, it was called Ake Manchester. Did you know that? Because aching men came here to sit in the pool. It's true. And now it's called Bath.
which is a bit unimaginative, isn't it? You can't call a place Bath just because there's a bath in it. That is not how it works. There's a bath in every town. Grow up. Got a lot of problems with Bath. I don't like the Bishop of Bath and Wells. Choose one, mate. That's my... Don't stop being greedy. There's not enough bishops to go around. Don't take up to Bath and Wells. Aren't even near each other, comparatively speaking. Jane Austen, of course, lived in Bath and wrote two of her books here. You all know that. It's a lot of literary... It's a very posh place. Not like Wolverhampton, where I was last. It's like if you could go to the most opposite place... Where should we go next? Yes, let's go to Bath next, because you won't be able to take the piss out of Irish, because it's too nice. Jane Austen, when she heard the news she was moving to Bath, she fainted on the spot. That is, that's how upset she was about coming here, so don't know if that's going to work out. Talking to the Roman Baths, I've got this on my phone. I just looked on TripAdvisor to see the worst reviews that the amazing Roman Baths... I've turned it off. I think I wrote them right in the back. I'll see if that comes back on again. I've correctly turned off my mobile phone, forgetting that I had some material on it. I'll read you the worst review for the Roman Baths. One star review comes from Stuart from Dagenham. £18 was way too much for a couple of dirty swimming pools. It takes about 15 minutes to see the lot should be free. That's your Roman bath, your amazing Roman baths there, Bath. No one cares about them. Okay, let's see if I've got this one. This one I copied and pasted. Hopefully it's going to be here. I tried to write a review before, but it was censored as inappropriate. How do you write about a place that shows movies with naked people that men come to watch? I consider that place inappropriate. That is the Roman Baths that they're talking about. The Roman Baths actually replied to that one on TripAdvisor. Hello, Mariah. The Roman Baths was a bathhouse in which 2,000 years ago, both men and women removed their clothes at certain stages in the bathing process. And this is referred to in both the audio and film-based explanations presented on site. It's done very tastefully and quite modestly, with some clever use of towels, as it is a popular site for families. Today, more women than men visit the Roman Baths, and the films can be seen by all visitors. So, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that's actually a selling point. £18. It's quite interesting to go through TripAdvisor and see the one-star reviews and see how the price of the Roman Baths has increased quite a lot just in the last 3 or 4 years. £14.50 people were complaining about 3 or 4 years ago, and now it's £18. So, do go, though. It's wonderful. And when I was working at a summer school in Oxford, we came here as a day trip, and I had about 20 students with me, and they'd all paid me their money in advance so I could go and pay for it. And then the woman at the desk said, "Are they students?" And she said, "Yes." And then I got £1 off for each student, and I kept all the money. So thank you for that, Bar. Kept that £20 there, £20 up. So let's move on, because we've got a couple of fantastic guests for you tonight. My only guest, we only do one a week, as you know, my only guest this week is probably best known for his additional voices in the film The Pirates in Adventures with Scientists. That's why we're here, to hear about those additional voices. Will you please welcome Peter Lord, ladies and gentlemen, and a little friend he's got. Peter Lord, come in, sit down. Sit down on this slightly creased chair from Bath. Hello, Peter. Wonderful to see you.
We've met
many times. Yep. And it's always a delight to be with you. Do you remember what additional voices you did in Pirates Adventures with Scientists?
I enacted the role of a policeman. Right. And I said, "Mind how you go." I think that was it.
It's good. It saved you paying an actor to do
exactly.
that, isn't it?
That is,
you're always thinking.
Exactly, yeah. I was determined to get that credit, you know, on IMDb.
Yeah, it
was actor, that. Mind how you go. See? Yeah.
Yep. It's good. It's all good. Well, look, I'm a massive fan of Aardman, as is everyone in the world. And I've been very much enjoying this fantastic new book, Aardman, An Epic Adventure, Take One Frame at a Time, which is by and about you and Dave Sproxton,
yep.
who you set Aardman up
yeah.
with. When you were very young, I mean, you met David Sproxton when you were, like, kids.
Well, yeah, we met when we were 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was at school at... a very old-fashioned boys' grammar school in Surrey, and I'd been living in Australia and for a few years and came back to Britain and ended up in this school, and the only spare desk in the room was next to Dave Sproxton, Sproxton brackets DA, and, you know, we met then, and we're still, you know, work partners today. So that's not bad, is it? Not bad.
I mean, it's sort of way, amazing the way you throw... I mean, we're all thrown together with people, and most of them we don't set up international businesses with. But there aren't many even sort of successful creative partnerships. Like, you know, it's like Eric and Ernie, and Morecambe and Wise, when they were very young and worked together and then didn't work for a bit together.
Yeah.
And I guess Lennon and McCartney were quite young. We're not that young.
Yeah, we're 12.
It's pretty astonishing to... You're still friendly and still working together.
Yeah, it's great. It's lovely. Yeah. And... But in a funny way, like we weren't different from each other. No, we were just, different. So like we'd socialise quite differently at school, you know, and stuff like that. But then we had this thing, this amusing hobby when we were like 16, this trying animation that was a weird thing to do, you know, that most kids were.
It all started on a kitchen table, basically.
Literally, the classic British kitchen table. yes. In his house. And... And you know, I don't remember who suggested it, who it was that first said, "Hey, you should try animating." But somebody did, and we had the camera, had the kitchen table, and we animated. And now it's easy now. I mean, in a good way, like all kids can do it. Anyone can do it on their phone. But at the time, it was a strange thing to do, not an obvious thing to do, you know, and we were influenced by Terry Gilliam mostly, probably, you know, that stuff in Monty Python and stuff like that, yeah. So we were influenced by that, and we experimented, it was just for fun. It was just for fun, but animation. I recommend it really highly to people because there's still there's the illusion that it's very hard work and very slow and painful and agonizing, all of which it can be, those things. But it's exciting, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's that, you know, so it was just a bit of fun that you were having, and you obviously didn't anticipate it leading to you having massive studios in Bristol and making movies and
going to Hollywood and none of that.
No, so it's a lovely start. And you sort of had a lucky-ish break early on. Your dad was working for the BBC a little bit.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So you were messing around with stuff and he showed some of the work to produce at the BBC.
I do think that in most of the best stories, there's always a little bit of, like, nepotism creeps in. I think it should do. So don't feel bad about that, everybody.
Unless, you know, it doesn't happen to you, then you can...
and Dave's dad. Both fathers were in the BBC in different ways. Dave's dad performed the nepotism and put our work in front of the producer of a programme which nobody will know, but it was called Vision On.
They will know.
It was for...
Vision On is one of my absolute... I mean, I don't remember so much your exact stuff from it.
No.
It's one of my absolute earliest memories. I was born in 67, and it must have been coming out in the early 70s. And so I remember that thing that went...
That thing, all over the studio.
That
was a good thing.
And I remember the Vision On frog made out of Vision On back to front.
And
the gallery, which we reference a lot in our work later in the 90s, although that was mainly from Take Heart as well, which obviously also worked.
But there was a gallery, yeah. And there will be a prize for those. We can't return them, but there will be the prize for those we show, they used to say.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were lucky. So we got into that programme. And because I think, you know, basically it was a BBC programme for children and they had a small budget. And they wanted cheap animators, and so two schoolboys were like, you know, perfect. We were really, really, really cheap, and we made a film, and the first film is about a character that we called Ardman, hence the sexy red name there, And it was a little, and Aardman was a superhero sort of character, sort of, and it wasn't very good, but it was quite a good story, and just good enough for them to buy it. And then that started the whole thing, I guess.
Right. Yeah, so you named the, you sort of formed a company and named it after this character,
yeah.
And then never did anything with the, well, did a little bit with the character, but then decided not to rest the character.
Yeah, we discussed, you know, other names, like you know, like... Lord and Sproxton. That, you know, Lord, yeah. Lord Sproxton sounds kind of like powerful, you know. And Pete and Dave, friendly, and you know, Super Animation Limited. We discussed all these names,
yeah.
And then in despair, we chose Aardman. And then for several years, everyone just said, "Well, that's a stupid name, man. You should change it."
Right.
And I vividly remember being in a room in Bristol with some people. And trying to brainstorm a better name than Aardman, you know, like, yeah. You know, Brunel Animations. Well, that's rubbish. But Far West Animations and stuff. We tried all these things. Yeah. And then, in despair, we went back to Aardman.
Stuck with Aardman. It's at the beginning of the alphabet. So if you were doing an Edinburgh Fringe show, that's a very good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe not for naming. But it's sort of, it's lovely the way, and I love the way things are named. And I was talking to Goodies the other week at the Slapstick Festival, which we may talk about, but, you know, they had lots of choices for the Goodies, and they end up with the Goodies. And there's something, you know, about the right name, even if it's not the right name at the time, it becomes the right name.
Yes.
And Aardman seems such... When you don't know all of that backstory, it just... Aardman's a great
name.
Yeah,
it does, yeah. And when you see it now, if I go and see it in the movies, and in a big cinema, and a big caption comes on in red on black, and I think, wow, that looks... that's pretty good, you know. And, then it's funny to know inside that it was just a, you know, not even a joke, just less than a joke, an amusing thing when we were 16, you know, to choose that name.
Yeah. It's great. And you obviously are very much associated with the West Country. You're based in Bristol.
Yep, yep.
And were you born in Bristol?
Yeah, yeah.
So you came back to Bristol. You decided to base yourself in Bristol because that's where Vision On... Was produced.
Yeah.
And the minute you based yourself in Bristol, Vision On
stopped. Yes, yeah, yeah, yes, that's true. Yes, that was a bad day. That was the only you know, the only gig we had. Yes, the only out there we had, and we'd graduated in other things. We never studied animation, so we graduated in English literature in my case. And geography in Dave's case, so we were well sorted for geography anyway. And so we came to Bristol to set up shop, and then immediately that gig was cancelled, which was, you know, was terrible. But then luckily they brought back they created Take Heart, which was the Tony Hart program. Yeah, and we kept going. Yeah.
So so you had something in Vision On called the Gleebies.
Gleebies, very good. Yeah. Yes, the Gleebies. Yeah. They were like about that big, and they were made of plasticine, and there were four of them or five, and they're different colours, and they ran around in a little mob and wreaked havoc, and that was good, you know.
Yeah.
And before that, we'd done lots of different sorts of stories, and the producing people said, "Oh, we love the Gleebies, stick with that," and then when Take Heart started. It was kind of, what can you do that's like the Gleebies?
Yes, so you've got this, you know, you came up with this. I think, like, again, looking back at childhood figures that I liked and that you remember, and it's the anarchic characters,
yes.
Really.
Yes.
You know, I was talking about Zippy to you backstage, Zippy from Rainbow, who I met as an adult and was so terrified of. I'm really in awe of, you know, even though he was just kept in an IKEA bag, I still. But you know, he was this anarchic figure. Yeah. There was Tiz Was, which is a very anarchic show.
Yeah.
And Morph is the same, has that same level of. Tony Hart was this. If people don't remember Take Heart, some of you youngsters, most of you are old. Tony Hart was like a very posh sort of art teacher.
Yeah.
Quite not pompous exactly, but he had that level of, you know, he was an authority authoritative figure, a very nice. A likeable man,
but
you needed some kind of naughtiness in there for him to play against. And I guess he needed a double act partner, and his double act partner was a piece of plasticine.
Just so, I think so. I think the producer thought, that Tony was a lovely bloke, which as he is, was, as he was, you know, charming, but a bit, you know, kind of straight, you know, a bit
straight,
serious.
We had an art teacher who was a female art teacher, but she was very like that same level of, you know, that same sort of slight poshness and art, you know, that level of artiness. So Morph is this anarchic character kind of popping up on his desk and creating mayhem.
Yeah, yes. And when he first appeared, that was what he did, was just create, was all making a mess, you know, knocking over paint and interfering with Tony's artworks. That was the idea.
Yeah.
Whether it worked, I don't know. When I look at the first films we did, they look terrible. You know, they really, and Morph himself looks terrible.
Yes. But,
yeah, he's got like Mickey Mouse or like The Simpsons. He got to look younger over the years.
Yes.
He got when he first appeared. He's kind of like Neanderthal Morph.
Yes,
you know, he's got huge feet and a drooping demeanor. And a small head and a receding forehead, and because he's just made of plasticine and he had to balance, and so big feet and small head was a good idea, and his feet were so big they couldn't leave the ground, so he slid around the place. I should demonstrate.
Yes.
This is how he moved. It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
But you didn't start out too well.
But that is true. Like a lot of things go through this evolution, and often the first part in that evolution is a terrifying. You know, The Simpsons would look very weird in those early episodes.
Exactly, yeah.
Bungle from Rainbow. Go back to him. The first Bungle.
Yeah.
Is like someone's ripped the head off a bear and stuck it on a. It's like literally like a dead bear's face, tiny head.
Yeah.
Ooh. Just dead eyes.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, Google it, because it's there. I mean, it'll haunt you forever.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something in your first go that has to be primevally wrong and evil,
past it. Yeah,
and then evolve beyond
that.
Yeah. But obviously, Morph took off. Although I read in the book, you say Morph is still. You haven't made any money from Morph over the whole years. You're still owed. The book claims that Morph you're still in debt over.
Probably.
Morph.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it? It's so ridiculous. I remember going to our bank manager when that dates me. When you had a bank manager to go to, we wanted to borrow, you know, 500 quid or something. You know, and we went in with some Morph merchandise. This must have been 2 years in, and there's like a very crappy bendy toy Morph. Anyone got a bendy toy Morph? They'd be worth a bit now. And something really crappy. And we said, you know, this is the future. We're going to get into the merchandising racket and we'll be so rich. But it never actually happened. Never.
It's weird that I mean, there's still an opportunity for that to happen.
I hope
Morph
is
still going. But it was such an iconic figure. It's amazing that's...
Yeah. Yes, it was kind of disappointing.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, we saw like, I mean, I'm sorry, this is all ancient history, but like things like the Wombles and the Mr. Men, and we thought, wow, this is the business to be in, this is great, but it never quite worked. But still, that's not what it's about, is it? we love him for...
Well, I think that's true, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've... I love you guys, because you've created this massive business, and I've been to the Arden Studios... Yeah. The current ones, we've obviously had lots of different ones over the years. And it's this huge complex. And, you know, thousands of people working for you.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, but it feels like it was never about the money. It was about creating stuff that was good. And what I like about my visits to Aardman is everyone, even though they're doing, well, anywhere else in the world would be the drudgery work of making tiny mouths and then moving them a little bit.
Yeah.
Everyone is so happy to be there.
Yeah.
I don't know if, again, they may be in a cult and you've somehow hypnotised.
But
people, you know, it feels like you treat the people who work for you very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that you take the ideas work in all directions in that company that people can...
Yeah, yes. And, I think we do treat them quite well. Yeah, we like to, you know. I do think... Seriously, that people are entitled should enjoy what they do if they possibly can, you know, and it works out really well somehow, you know. It's amazing, you know. There's lots of people. It's not just, you know, me. I don't do anything most of the time, but there's lots of, you know, fantastic creative people doing new things the whole time.
But then people want to work for you, and people, I'm presuming, to gravitate towards you if you are an animator and you go, I'd love to work, which is, I mean, we'll get on to Nick Park, but that's presumably how your Nick worked. He was a student and he liked what you were doing, and then, you know, that was worthwhile getting him on board, wasn't it?
And still now, he's all right, you know. I mean, that worked out very well. I was, you know, I was saying to you before that I think we've been really lucky, and I think our timing's been really good, and that's, you know, and that's...
I mean, I think there's always luck in everything, and, you know, I think what's interesting, again, I think going back to you and David at the beginning of it, is that is you're bringing different skills to it, and you're the more artistic, creative one, and he's the more practical one, and, you know, you needed those two personalities to make that work, and you were, you know, you're all clearly very talented. So, you know, that's going to get you a long way. But, of course, there's still luck in everyone's journey. And, you know, like you say, Vision On could have carried on and you could have just been doing little doodles for those.
Yes, yes.
You'd have been very happy being similar to the Noggin the Nog and Bagpuss crates.
Very happy
part
with
of
that.
A post-skate.
Very happy doing that, I mean, I think that was probably the game plan, was to do series for kids. You know, that seemed like the only place there was money, really. And then... And then we met this Nick Park, this guy, who, as a very, very shy student, you know, really. And animators, you know, it's a very private occupation, you know. And a lot of very quiet, you know, introverted kind of people working away in little quiet corners. And so Nick was very quiet and private, and he was at film school, and he was making the first Wallace and Gromit film, which became A Grand Day Out. And, you know, we met him, and we thought he was jolly good. You know, but I didn't know he was a total superstar. That wasn't clear, but he's a genius. So that was a good timing, you know. You know, he came to Bristol. You know, he was doing A Grand Day Out, and the way that the business worked, that the film school worked, was he was shooting this film really, really slowly. Really slowly. Like, you know, like it taken him 5 years or something to get... He only shot 2 minutes or something like that. Something quite shocking. And so we invited him to come to Bristol to finish it. That was basically the scheme.
Yeah.
And then also to do bits and pieces, you know, including some morph and including some really terrible characters called the Tin Pots. They were in series two of Take Heart. Check them out. They're terrible. Really awful idea. Really, really bad idea. I'm blaming Nick for this. But his animation was good, but the idea was very bad.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's good to know there have been some failures, because everything's, you know, nearly everything's taken off to such an extent. It's good to know there's some bad ones in there.
Yeah.
I came one of my trips to Aardman. You had quite a few comedians come over, and we all had to make our own morph. Yes. You showed us how to make a morph. Yeah. I'm not very artistic, and my morph was, I mean, didn't even look like Neanderthal morph. But I thought it would be a good idea to have a series of all the morphs that kids and bad artistic people come and make in your studios that get thrown in the bin, and they all live underneath Aardman in their kind of Quasimodo morphs. Morpheus in the Underworld is what I thought we could call it.
Very good.
So if you want to, you know, I've pitched him backstage just a cartoon about a badger, and he's gone with that.
Yeah.
Said, have you ever done a badger? He said, no. He said, why don't you do a badger? And Morpheus in the Underworld.
Morpheus in the Underworld.
So we've got Morph. Have we got Morph here? Should we meet Morph? Yeah. That's why everyone's come. They're not interested in us. Let's see. Be quiet, or he won't come out.
Yeah.
He's got a nice. That's a nice case he's in. Only the best. Given he hasn't made you any money, that's not a lot.
How's that? Don't do that. Thank you.
Ooh. That's not Morph.
Oh, sorry, that's Morph. No. But here's the other one. Because that is enough. That's Morph.
We'll tighten that one now, dude.
Yeah.
I'll just come and I can. Come
no, thank you. I think the bubble wrap's a bit down market, but there he is. Whoa, there he is. There he is.
It's hard to make. It's hard to make. It's hard to make it that round.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So, and he travels in that little case, and I take him around the world with me, and he's just plasticine is all he is.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, really. It's like it's so cheap. You know? Yeah. Like in Nick recently made a film, Early Man, our latest film, and it's got cave persons in it, and you know they look kind of jolly and primitive, and they cost thousands to make. You know? Right. I mean, tens of thousands to make. Whereas this guy costs that's about 30p worth of plastic.
Plasticine must love you, though. Yeah. I mean, how much plasticine does Aardman buy in a year? I mean, is it they must have had to open a new factory.
Well, yeah.
Or did you just reuse it? Whenever
I have reusing it. I mean, that was a morph earlier on today.
Right.
Before I left, I squished him up. Because plasticine was a bath company. Their famous bath invention.
Oh, really?
Yeah, William Harbert's invented it in Bath, and I went. But they closed down now. Sadly, they had a factory by the canal, and it burned down, and which was unfortunate. And they went bust as well. So shame.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But now there's another company called New Plast or something that make it. So
right.
Yeah. And we have at work we have a bloody great mixer where we churn it up and add, add secret ingredients and colours and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
It's lovely to see him.
Yeah, it's good to see him. I
take him with
me. I
should have brought my one along.
I would animate him, but then it'll take forever. But
we've got cameras, so we can do it.
Yeah.
Because there's the famous instance when you were on Blue Peter quite early on with Sarah Green era, which must have been enjoyable.
Yep.
And you animated something around Sarah Green, and she couldn't believe how long it
took. That's right. Yes, it's the most humiliating old footage from 1980, and because we were very we had no experience of showing off at all, and so to perform for camera, like she'd say, "So Peter, you're making a model," and I go, "Yes, I'm working on Morph now." It's awful. But then we animated and shot. I shot like about 8 seconds or something in the afternoon, which is insane. I mean, now we never get anywhere near that now. Right. But she still said, "Wow, it's so slow." Have you seen that Fast Show sketch that they did? They did a humorous, insulting Fast Show sketch about animation.
No, did they?
Yeah, and it was about, and it was Paul Whitehouse, I guess, and he did the anyone fancy a pint thing. So the animator was going, and then we move him just a little bit, and I take a picture, and then we move him just a little bit.
There's a brilliant bit in Parks and... Do you ever watch Parks and Recreation where the guy loses his job and does stop frame animation and he...
I didn't see that.
He made a little version of himself. It's called Requiem for a Tuesday.
Oh, good.
And it's got the music in, and he says, "Show me what you got so far." And it's literally like, "Stand in the place where you live." And then the guy gets out of bed and that's it. And he goes, "It's taken me a month. I thought there was way more than this." He's clearly just had a mental breakdown. So, people think you're odd, Peter, I think is what the comedy world thinks you're odd.
Yes.
You know they can just do this on computers now. You don't have to. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Wasting your time,
Peter. That's it.
Your business will never be a success with it. Yeah.
It is incredibly annoying, though, when people... I'm sorry. In computer animation, when they copy stop frame, which they sometimes do, that really pisses me off. get your own technique. Stick with the computers. Yeah, I wish they wouldn't do that, by the way.
And I was watching this, I rewatched the Sledgehammer video. I mean, I think people might not realise how much of the stuff in the last 20 or 30 years comes from your studios.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people maybe know the Sledgehammer video did. Yeah. But it's like, it's you know, I thought, oh, I'm going to watch this and it's going to look dated and it's going to look weird. And it doesn't really. It looks, it's, there's so much imagination and so much going on in there. And that must have taken a long time. You had Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, Peter Gabriel.
He must have been in with you for years.
Yep. living on the stairs. It was, no, 6 days. I have to say, it wasn't our idea. There was a guy called, an American guy called Steve Johnson, whose idea it was.
Right.
Really smart guy. But they came to us to do it, for which we were eternally grateful. And Peter Gabriel is very smart, very knowledgeable about animation. So he knew what he was doing, and he signed up for it. And the joy is that the way it was made, with everything happening in front of the camera, so there's no electronic trickery, you know, it was super old school. That was the funniest thing. You could have made it in black and white in 1910, you know, but because it was done the way it was done. But somehow the world was ready for it, and maybe there'd been too much sort of slick stuff on, you know, in pop videos at that time. So it was done.
But it's just. I mean, it makes modern day videos look kind of, you know, it was a period where people were sort of doing basically art in pop videos as well. But there's so much detail in there, and there's so many different ideas in there. And some of it's quite, I mean, it starts with sperm swimming around.
Yeah, it starts with sperm. Yeah.
One of them looks a bit dead, and one of them's quite vicarious.
And
there's a bit where eggs turn into frozen chickens.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes. Yes, Nick animated that. So the old sledgehammer came down. And on an egg, you can watch this at home. Then you get like a grouse and a partridge and a, you know, I don't know, a pheasant and a chicken appearing for, you know, a 12th of a second each.
Right.
So their short lives were kind of immortalized in that film. And then the dancing chickens, and Nick animated them, and they were real chickens. They were from Sainsbury's. And then the model makers took them and they shoved aluminium wire inside the joints. So they were real chickens, but with aluminium wire in. And shoving in the wire obviously took some time, took a day. And then they went back in there.
Then you had to get one that wasn't rotten and get another one.
Yeah, then they went back in the fridge overnight. Yeah. And then the next day they were brought out of the fridge and glued onto some sticks. And then Nick had to animate them. And he wasn't at all enthusiastic. There's pictures of him wearing, you know, sort of hazmat suit, you know, animating. Ooh, these nasty, rancid chickens. And they just about survived.
Right. I mean, they look so fake. That's the thing. They look completely like they're made out of plasticine. You didn't need to kill and humiliate those chickens.
Sorry. Yeah. And then there was, because there was those chickens, and then there was some vegetables. There was fruit, wasn't there? There was kiwi fruit and bananas and stuff dancing. And then there was some fish, and the studio smelt like a bazaar in the Far East. It was quite good actually. Like, it was all done in summer, and everything was going off. You know, and Peter Gabriel was great. You know, he had amazing energy. And then at the end, he's still doing his stuff. You know, and these backing singers came in. I don't know where they came from. I have no idea. But bless them. They came in. And then they discovered that they weren't backing singers. They had to, you know, be animated. So I was saying to them, okay, move your hands. Whoop, stop. Yeah, hold it and stick out your hip and hold it. Yeah, fine, thank you. And now they take half a step. Move your hands a bit more. Stick out your hip a bit more. You know, and so on.
Yeah.
And they got, you know, fairly pissed off, understandably. Yeah.
They go, you know, we could just move. You can just film this bit. We'll just do a dance, you can film it.
Yeah, that would be too easy. So then at a certain stage, the backing singers end up on chairs, which, you know, never happens in real music videos, right? You know, that would never happen. The sexy backing singers would never end up on chairs, but they did, because otherwise they were going to walk out, I think. So they end up sliding up and down on chairs for a bit, yeah.
It's an amazing video. It's still worth watching. It's still there.
Yeah, it's great. It's
still there.
It's
on
great.
YouTube. I want to give you £10.
Oh, brilliant.
Because when I was at university, I shoplifted Creature Comforts. I think you probably
thanks.
Probably got the money.
Yeah.
I should probably be giving it to the shop, but you've been paid twice.
I'll send on.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. All right.
It's probably cost more than 10 quid at the time. Yeah, it's probably about 25 quid for a video back
then.
Yeah,
those were the days when the video...
I'm not sure I even had a video player, Peter. I went through my third year at university. I was having a bit of a breakdown because I hadn't done enough work. So I did steal quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Never got caught though, Peter. That's the thing. I never got caught to this day.
Hey.
I write to the police. I go, copper, you still ain't got me. Cut a little bit off the Creature Comforts video, send it.
Yeah.
It's very good, though, Creature Comforts. And that was, again, that was quite a pioneering idea to animate stuff that had been recorded.
Yeah.
You'd done a few things before Creature Comforts.
Yeah, again, sort of like, so we'd done some films based on real voice recordings, yeah? And, like, the very first one was recorded at a Salvation Army hostel in Bristol. And it's quite good. It's good. It's quite serious, you know, because there were no jokes in it. It was serious and almost like a weird animated documentary thing.
Yeah.
But it was a big experiment and it worked. And then we Dave and I ploughed that furrow for we did 7 or 8 more films like that. And then Nick Park comes along, old smart ass Nick Park. and he's got a much better idea, which is to do it with animals and make it funny. And you know, and it's great, you know, it's a lovely film. And in fact his first idea was different. His first idea was to go to the zoo and record the customers talking about the animals, saying, "Oh, look at that fat one, Mum. What's that one doing?" And then he was going to put that into the mouths of the animals looking out of the cage.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was the plan. But of course, nobody ever said, "What? That look at that fat one, Mum." You know, and he was there. I think he had a microphone hidden in an umbrella. You know, like very, and standing awkwardly beside families. With his umbrella, trying to record him, and it didn't. That didn't work, and then so that was a dud. But then he had the other idea, which is really smart, to interview some of his friends about their lives, and then put that into the mouths of the animals. So famously, there's that Brazilian jaguar who says, "I need space," you know, and that was a friend of Nick's, a student in Bristol, a Brazilian guy who was a big show off, and he did that. And yeah. and the miserable gorilla from Belfast, she was like a student teacher complaining about the weather in Bristol. And then the polar bears operated the corner shop just around the corner from our studio. Obviously, they weren't polar bears, obviously. Well, but they
spoiling the magical illusion.
so it was great. And then that won an Oscar, which was, you know, pretty extraordinary. I mean, amazing. I mean,
did you go to the? I mean, you've been nominated for a few Oscars.
I've been there. Yeah, every time I'm there. Like, every time.
Yeah.
You know, some people say, "Oh, it's very boring. It's all the same." But I love it. I love it. You know, it's because. The Americans, they just do showbiz, don't they? They invented showbiz, didn't they? You know, like, and they do celebrity, and they do it so wholeheartedly. All the dressing, that they take it so seriously. The Brits, we can't do that. We have to take the piss out of it the whole time. But the Americans don't take the piss. They just enjoy it, and they love it. And when you go there, you end up in a fabulous traffic jam of limos, like hundreds of limos that are gridlocked. To get into the place, and then at a certain stage, there's always a nice moment when you pass the loony evangelists who shout at you because obviously showbiz is full of faggots, so they have to shout at you about that, even though you know you're just an instant animator in a limo.
Share some of the faggots out with the rest of us.
Yep, that's that.
Not fair.
Yeah, he's out. And then you walk down a corridor of a billion press and people screaming and the cameras are going and not obviously not for us. I understand.
Do they let the animators go in the same way as the proper film stars? Is there a back door for you guys? Coming through the kitchen, yeah. Peter?
You're not far wrong. You're not far. I mean, yeah, you, it's funny because you know, we know, that we're of no interest at all. No, absolutely not at all. But so what you do is you join the red carpet, you get your... And then you sort of do the old bit of moonwalking, so you get to do it, you know, to go along it a few times, and I'll hang out waiting for somebody famous to come along, and yeah, it's good fun, good fun.
It's great, marvelous.
I love it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's marvellous. I'll ask you an emergency question just because, you know, hey. These people in Bath want to see one live.
Yep.
We did some backstages, which is always available on, if you're a badger or a dripster, you can get to extra interviews backstage. I've come across this one. I'm going to ask it because it's what I've come across. What is your favourite Oxide? Just came up.
I'm a big Rust fan, you know. I mean, just in my invader here.
It's good that you could answer that. I think a lot of people would have struggled with that one. Well done. All right, look, this is a question that I'm not sure I've asked yet. What was the worst thing a teacher ever said to or did to you at school? And was it a games teacher?
Well, it probably was a games teacher. I was just, you know, so rubbish at games. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yes, I remember, yeah... I'm trying to avoid your question. But I was at school in Australia,
yes.
and they played rugby league there, and in Sydney. And I was like, I was a little scrawny little fellow with little pin legs and stuff, like that, stick legs, and the pitch was baked because it's 35 degrees, so it's just like concrete, but with some scratchy grass on top, and all these big. Kids were knocking me over and, you know, scraping me on the grass. So, and then, yeah, so that was no good.
Yeah.
And then they played cricket and the ball jumps up and hits you on the hand. And then, so I was rubbish at all sports. So
it's,
it probably
was against me. I mean, I remember, because I was in England, obviously, and all my memories of rugby, which can't be always the case, was the ground was just frozen, so there'd be frost on the ground. Frozen solid, and you'd just be bundled over against, you know, not even snow, just horrible cutting frost.
And if you're thin, like I was, you know, thin and weedy and cold and wet. Oh, horrible, horrible, horrible. So, yeah.
Yeah, you said because I was fat, you're saying it was better. It was. Just slightly cushioned the fall. There's so much to talk to you. Oh, my goodness, it's gone so fast already. But we've still got some time, don't worry. What do I want to talk to you about? Oh, well, I loved the grommets that you had around Bristol a few years ago.
Yeah.
They got auctioned off by Tim Wannacott.
Yes.
I do not approve of his catchphrase, which is yes, Yes, that is not a catchphrase. But he's made up for a little bit because you made, did you make £2 million of those or something, or more than that?
I should know. A lot of millions. Yeah.
20
yeah,
million it might have been.
Not was, that many. But, no. But on the night, it was more than 2 million, I think, on the night. Yeah, you're right. On the night, yes. That was great. I mean, it was amazing. They, it's for the children's hospital. So, you know, you can't help but feel good about it. You know,
it's amazing. It's but great. That's how, I mean, they're so iconic. It's so, they're held in such, you know, affection by people.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And again, I will say, they are a great design. You know, like Gromit is a great design. And so they made, yeah, the first year we made like 80 of the 60. I can't remember. A lot of them. Yeah. And they were painted by artists, you know, and ordinary people, and stuck on the streets of Bristol, and people just came to enjoy them, and it was so simple, like, you know, made everyone happy, and then they flogged them off at the end, and people wanted to buy them, and paid lots of money. It was just fantastic, you know, it was wonderful to see, and then it goes into the Children's Hospital, and they buy amazing things, you know, super high tech. You know, space age things they can buy, and so we just feel great about it. I mean, yeah, honestly,
it's amazing.
Just end up smiling about it because it's so, you know, it's so nice. And
Will, is Wallace and Gromit? We've lost Peter Salis.
Yes,
so
indeed.
Does that mean that's the end of Wallace and Gromit as well?
I can't quite believe that. No, I think not. No, I think not. I'm sure they'll be back. I mean, in fact, you know, hot off the press, I can't reveal anything except that I think that next week Nick is going to like pitch something to me.
Oh right, okay.
I don't know, like an idea.
You're going to say no.
No, yeah. Say
I don't. There's anything. Like, I don't. This Wallace and Gromit thing's going to catch on.
There's no mileage in that. Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We shall see. But yeah, I think they'll be back. Yes. And that'll be a good thing. Yeah.
So Peter Salis was amazing.
He was great
for that. And what an incredible. I mean, like, I remember we wrote a. Assume we wrote a sitcom in 1998, and there was an elderly character in it, and Peter Salis actually said he would do it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh my God, but you know, he's so old. What if he?
Yeah.
What if he dies? You know? It seemed like he was going to go on forever, even with the curse of Last of the Summer Wine.
Yeah.
He still
kept going.
Seemed to be immortal. So
yeah.
But he was working right into his 90s, wasn't he? I mean, he was
yeah,
nice.
Yes,
something.
He did. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was
still fantastic.
He was great.
You know, he was amazing.
Lovely bloke. And but latterly, he suffered from macular degeneration, eyesight thing.
Oh right.
Yeah, but it didn't stop him. He had to have the script written really large and gigantic words.
One word a page.
Yeah, sort of thing actually. But he could still do the Wallace thing, you know. And it was great. He was great. A trooper. They had an opening at a gallery in London one time for some artwork from Wallace and Gromit. I can't remember what it would be. And Peter came along. And so he was the star guest for the opening. But he didn't do a speech. All he did was just say Wallace's lines, like, you know, cracking doors, Gromit, and that sort of thing. And absolutely brought the house down. I thought, that's a great act. You know, no work at all, just has to say those lines. And people loved it. Yeah.
And you lost a lot of the props in a... You had a big... The plasticine seems to be very flammable. Yeah. You had a big fire at Aardman in 2005, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yes. Yes, that was a shame.
So you lost
a load of good stuff. I didn't. It was very odd, though. It was very odd because it wasn't in the studio. It was in a warehouse that we had by the Feeder Canal in Bristol, and I never went to this warehouse before or after. I've never seen it in my life. I've only ever seen the photograph of it with fire leaping out through the roof.
Yeah.
And I didn't, it didn't notice very much what had gone until many, many years later when we came to put on an exhibition in France, in Paris. And then, oh shit, there are no wrong trousers. You know, and the pie machine from Chicken Run had gone. And that was a fabulous thing, you know. Yeah. And the and the plane in which they flew away at the end of the chicken run, that was gone. So that, and in fact, all the chickens were gone. All the chickens were incinerated.
Chickens haven't come out of this podcast well, have they? There may be some kind of avian revenge in there.
Oh, God.
How dare you do this to us?
I thought, because the chicken puppets were much more elaborate than this boy, so they were about this big, and they're silicon and resin and stuff, and they've got steel skeletons inside them. So I kind of imagined fancifully that you could sift through the ash and find their skeletons. But it was so hot that they were like vaporized entirely. Oh. So yeah. So that was bad, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was a shame.
There must be a film in that though, near Chicken Run. Is that what Chicken Run 2 is gonna be? Yes. Them all getting caught up in a terrible fire.
Yeah.
We've got to run. There is going to be a Chicken Run 2, or is
there? Will
there,
be. Yeah. There will be, yeah.
Are they going to get back in? Is that the...
Yes, that's it, I think so. Breaking in is going to be basically the gag, Yeah. So those lovely chickens that were all lost in the conflagration have now been recreated quite nicely. Rather beautiful. I mean, they're fantastic. It's so lovely to see them again, you know. Yeah, it's great. They look lovely. Great designs, yeah. All we need is a script, then we'll be fine.
I can knock you something up. I went to the premiere of Chicken Run because I was dating one of the chickens at the time. I think there's a lot of things I think people wouldn't necessarily know. A lot of the adverts, I think, of Aardman that people wouldn't necessarily know.
Lots of those,
So the little Lurpak.
The Lurpak man.
Trombonist.
Yeah, that was good.
Cuprinol. Robbie Coltrane man.
Yes. Yes, Robbie Coltrane, yeah.
You've done quite a few others. Would you say your favourites of the adverts were?
We did lots of lovely polo ones, you know, some really, really smart ones for polo. British Gas.
Well, yeah.
And nearly, because it was electric. And that was the funny thing, is that everybody thinks it's gas. Like, so therefore, as advertising, it could be considered a bit of a dud. But... And I think it was because because it was warm and fuzzy, people thought that gas was warm and fuzzy for some reason, and electric was, you know, cold and anyway. So that was the whole point, was to make electricity fun, you know, easily turn off and onable and stuff. See, catchphrases and that man, the easily turn off and onable man. Drank in our local pub in Redland in Bristol, and was, you know, and was a great talker. I'll only say that. And the pandas were my neighbours. The penguins were the penguins in the electric commercial were the previously known as the polar bears from the Creature Comforts. Okay. Yeah, they were repurposed.
Anyone just walking in to hear this conversation now ago, there's a man on stage who's clearly lost his mind. I lived next to the penguins. They were our next door neighbours. They've been polar bears before.
Yeah. Fair point.
Oh, dear. I think, you know, it's a wonderful thing. It's wonderful that you're based in the West Country, because a lot of, you know, it's sort of a jewel in the crown of the West Country, I think, isn't it? Most people would have gone to London, where the action was. But I think, do you think that in a way has helped you preserve your kind of the unique nature of the company?
I think it has helped. Yes, it has. Yeah, because when we were starting out, you know, when we just done Morph maybe, or not even before that, and our friends, such as they were, in the business, there were very few. Said, "Oh, come to London! You're crazy. There's no passing trade in Bristol, which there wasn't." and then later, when we started doing TV commercials, the agency people, the London advertising agency people, were gobsmacked at the idea of coming to the West Country. They couldn't believe it that we were down here. But I do think it's been a good thing, you know. And we feel like we're part of Bristol, yes, you know, and you know, when you get to the station, you ask for Aardman, the cabbies know where it is without needing the address. That kind of thing is nice, yeah. Plus, we were, David, Nick and I were given Freeman of the City with full grazing rights. You
right.
Know. So, you know, goats and sheep, just anywhere you like.
It's fantastic. Well, I'm very proud to be from. I grew up in the West Country, and I feel like, you know, it does. It sort of is the jewel in our crown. We should be very, very proud of you. Not people here in Bath; they've got nothing to do with it. So it's just Bristol and below. we're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately. But it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you. Is there stuff you can tell us that's coming up beyond Chicken Run 2?
The next.
I know there's some secrets, but
the secrets I can't say, I suppose. No, but the thing I can say is definitely is Shaun the Sheep 2, the movie. And yes, indeed. And it's like a sci-fi thing,
right?
So it's great. So it's like an alien comes to the farm, and it's called Farmageddon. Which is, as far as I'm concerned, that sells it right there, I think.
It's very good.
Yeah.
And do buy this book, Aardman and Epic Journey, Take One Frame at a Time. It is a lovely, lovely story. You've made a morph during... It's not quite there, but it's still better than I could do with full concentration for an hour.
You get the idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Lord and Morph! You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Bath Comedia with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Peter Lord, and Morph as well. He was good, wasn't he, on this audio version? You loved that, I expect. Thank you to Pessa for producing this music. Thank you very much to everyone at the Bath Comedia, which I co-own, by the way. I own the time of sharing that, and that is mine. Thank you to everyone at Go Fast Stripe and everyone at Acast and the British Comedy Guide. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Hey, if you want to see us on the road, go to richardherring.com/gigs and find out if we're coming near to you. There's dates being added all the time. Go and check it out, my friends.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.